On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're solving crimes on the waterfront with Jenna Coleman in BBC One's The Jetty, harassing the manager of a carpet shop with Danny Dyer, no relation, in Mr. Big Stuff on Sky Max, and giving a big thumbs up or down to Gladiators in Ancient Rome with Anthony Hopkins in Those About to Die on Prime Video. Plus, Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram join us on this week's show to talk all about Apple's Lady in the Lake. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is taking hybrid working to the next level today, as some of us are in the studio, and one of us is very much not. Stephen, can you hear me?
Very good Taste of London reference.
There we go. See, and had Kay been on the board, she'd have been, I can hear you, Clem Fandango.
No, but she didn't. I'm sorry. I wasn't. I'm a little under the weather, which is why I'm working remotely. So I'm not as on the ball as I usually would be.
But look, it's Kay. We've got Kay dialing in remote via the marvel of our studio's control deck. And this may end up being yet another, frankly, shambolic episode. Though I do thank everyone who wrote in to say that last week's absolute shit show was surprisingly seamless. So that's nice. But Kay is here in spirit, if not in body. Boydie, on the other hand, is here in body, but not in spirit. Isn't that right, Boyd?
Good one, James.
Is that the joke that you inserted late in the day?
No.
That's just, do you know what? He's just shooting with live ammo.
That's just the level of your bants right
yeah,
now.
That's
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. No, yeah, fair enough, yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm in neither spirit or body or whatever it is.
Because you were celebrating the ripping victory of, quote-unquote, our boys.
Listeners, you wouldn't believe it, but we had a... I was watching at the England football last night. I was recording this on Thursday morning, Wednesday night, the semi-final, which England triumphed, obviously, in over Holland, winning 2-1. I was watching a friend's copious. I was drinking quite a lot of champagne.
Cristal,
Boyd, of course. We've talked about this. You know your issue with champagne when you have too much champagne.
Yeah, but I'm over that issue. It was just the issue of drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Hangover.
I don't need to get hangovers. I'm not a hangover kind of guy, but I was tired. I'm very tired. And
humble brag.
Yeah. Distracted this morning.
Well, if you have Cristal of that purity, boy, it tends to leave.
That is true, yeah.
What I was going to say was, what was incredible, listeners, as you might not be surprised to hear, but it's still phenomenal. This enormous, 21 million people watched this last night.
Right.
Mm. I mean, pretty much half of the adult population or whatever. But James had no idea what the fuck was going on when I mentioned it to him this morning on the group chat. Yeah. It was like, what? Who? What? How can you avoid pop culture and news so assiduously that you're the only man in England that doesn't know England are through to the final of this thing?
I just want to lift the lid on this. Yeah. I'm not going to go into details, but I want to lift the lid in that there was this brilliant cross wires between Boyd and James where Boyd thought that James was talking to him. He was clearly talking to me. And as a result, Boyd then went through the machinations of what happened with the match last night. And to be fair, to James's credit, he went along with it. But it was so clear to me at home. I was like, no, this is not what James meant.
Also, to be fair, he literally replied to me with that.
Yes, in error. But yes.
But so that was the reason why I thought he was talking to me. Because
it was a total farce. Yeah.
Are you talking to me?
In an absolute parody of my entire life, a lot of the details of this were explained to me by the builders that I currently have in my house fixing problems.
Yes.
And when they arrived early in the morning, one of them said, oh, great result last night. I went, yes. Tennis, was it? And he was like...
This is literally like the IT crowd with the brilliant episode where they're faking...
I've seen that one.
Yeah, where they're faking... Oh, Arsenal, we heard...
Oh, great result,
it's
great
hilarious.
Result. What was it? Was it football? Is that... Oh, brilliant. Who are we playing? Yeah, and this is the... World Cup? No, the Euros. Yeah. Right, okay.
James, those builders are definitely going to mess up your place now.
I appreciate it. I may have acted in error. Yeah.
You should have pretend to be fully on board with the football. It'll be brilliant.
I don't think I can pull it off. I really don't.
Maybe.
I think always just say, like, oh my God, Saka was brilliant.
I was going to say this. Yeah. That's the only name of a footballer right now. I should have gone, oh, Saka, and just shook my head. Just shook my head.
That would work.
A bit ambiguous.
That would work.
Would it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because a shake, it could be like a negative thing.
Or it could be a positive thing.
Yeah, set your face to neutral and just shake your head and say Saka.
Oh, God, I don't know what I'm doing.
Do it.
Okay.
I mean, the final is on Sunday.
That's on Sunday.
How long does the building go on for?
They won't be working on Sunday, but
no, but Monday with Monday morning.
Oh, Monday morning. So you say when I see them on Monday morning, I should be like, oh,
all right,
yeah, right.
Do you know what we'll do? Boyd and I, as a service, will tee you up on the WhatsApp group.
Well, I was going to say, can we set up a Zoom or Teams?
You know? Do you know what's going to happen? They're going to come in. I bet I'll be like, oh, second. They'll be like, fuck that. Did you see House of the Dragon episode 5? Fucking hell. And I'll be like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Maybe.
Well, listen. Depending how it goes on Sunday night, you might not want to talk to them at all. We'll let you know because if it doesn't go our way, everyone's going to be feeling a bit sad.
Okay. This is good information. I will be watching House of the Dragon episode 5. In fact, as we have said, Boydie, due to popular demand, we are going to start doing House of the Dragon belated, starting halfway through the season, spoilers on Pilot Plus. So beginning with the next episode, there will be House of the Dragon chat.
Something for us all to look forward to.
Yes, but not from Kay, who is a conscientious objector.
I am going to be... No, I did offer to watch it, but then I realised that because it's all gobbledygook to me, no one needs to hear... Listeners don't need to hear me go, oh, I don't understand
this. All you have to do after every episode, just let me go, oh, Aegon, and just shake your head like really like ambiguously. And we'll be like, oh, okay, what's the episode? Yeah. That's what he's talking about.
Which is Aegon, that my Sacker? Though?
Yeah, that's right, Aegon. Because not only is there a character called Aegon, but there's like 15 of them because the Targaryens call all their kids Aegon. So you've got, it's like spread betting. You know exactly what you're doing.
Okay. I'm just even lost with that sentence. So I'll be the adjudicator while you two chat about it and ask questions.
That sounds perfect.
That's my role.
But if we're going to segue seamlessly into what we've been watching, I think we should probably start with House of the Dragon. Sorry, Kay. And I'm not going to go into any spoilers here, but I'm just going to say, those of you who have now had the chance to watch episode 4 of House of the Dragon, obviously episode 5 aired last night, I'm aware of that, but as we record, episode 5 has not aired, which also means we haven't seen it. But episode 4, bloody hell. Hey, Boydie? Bloody hell.
We were sent 1-4, the critics, like us.
Yes.
The important people.
Yes.
The elite.
No, hang on. Hang on.
All right. Sent up to 1-4, and 4 is astonishing. It feels like the first 3 is like a slow build to the absolute madness of 4.
I have, and we'll get into this in the spoiler special, but I have questions about the tactics deployed by several people there. I have tactical critiques.
Yeah, fair enough.
Nevertheless, in terms of spectacle, what an episode. Yeah. It was mad.
It was incredible, Best use of dragons.
Yes.
I think probably in the...
I mean, and people thought that the tumescent member in episode 3 was impressive, but the tumescent dragons, that was a whole other thing.
Absolutely, a lot of tumescent.
You just wanted to say tumescent member again, didn't you?
I did.
Always.
We had a tweet about that, actually.
Did we? Some feedback.
No, just about the fact that we are very penis obsessed, and they're encouraging it. They're saying 5 stars.
I was about to say, wait till you get to the review section of this week's podcast.
And also, wait till you get to the what we've been watching section, by the way. A little taster.
What? So yours is just poor?
No.
I've had a preview of this. He's not literally a preview. He's mentioned it to me already. I think I know what you're referring to. But shall we get? Let's get to it.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is not strictly speaking a TV thing, but it's all about.
It's all
about Kit Harington.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Kit Off Harington?
It's Kit Off Harington.
I don't know anything about this.
I reviewed his new play, Slave Play.
Yeah.
On in London's.
Oh, he's in that. I didn't know he was in that.
He is in Slave Play. Yeah. And I went to see it to review it for Radio 4's Front Row, which I'll be recording later.
James, neither I nor you were invited.
I didn't get a plus one. I genuinely did not get a plus one. I would absolutely have invited you.
I believe you.
I've been to the theatre together a few times, but of course I went with James.
It's true.
Stranger Things.
Fawlty Towers. Right. So,
and Fawlty Towers.
Towers. Yeah. So
we're like theatre buddies.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
The bromance continues.
And I reviewed In Heat as well. And In Heat, I referred to the fact that Kit Harington spends the last 10 minutes of this play, 10 minutes, utterly and completely naked. Frontally naked. And so I mentioned this in my review, and I said, Harrington gets his kit off. And I put in brackets, sorry, because it was such an obvious pun. Kay, when she was reading the proof, questioned it, saying, what are you talking about? Why are you saying sorry? Are you sorry for mentioning it to the subs? I'm like, no, I'm sorry for the pun.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
So I actually got rid of that, though, Kay. Because readers are going to be confused by my terrible pun, I'm just going to keep the terrible pun in.
That's a great pun. No.
Yeah. So, Harrington...
Put it back in. That was me being fuzzled.
So, Kit Harrington is entirely naked for the last 10 minutes.
You wore nothing, Jon Snow.
Exactly. Exactly. Has he now? Here's my question.
Yes.
Has he been fully frontal in Game of Thrones? Because he was kind of
naked. He's naked
wasn't he?
On a slab when he's dead. So it's a bit necrophilia. But I don't believe you see his long claw at any point.
No. Well, you certainly do in Slave Play. Mm. And they go through major machinations with the audience to make sure you do not take a stealth photo or video.
How?
When you get to queue up to get your ticket, they give you a sticker and they put it on the camera on your phone.
Yeah.
And then they check it again two more times before you take your seat. So you could, in theory, and obviously they're watching you. They've got ushers watching the whole audience the whole time as well. And the other thing is the set design is a massive mirror. It's loads of mirrors on the stage, so you could equally see someone trying to stealth get their phone out as well. Mm. So it takes a brave person to try and get their phone out. To take a
did he do it
of Harrington with his kids?
Well, come on then, show me, Boyd.
Yeah, go on. Let's see the pic.
Show it. Let's see.
No, put that on the group chat.
Steady on. They'll think you're being serious.
So they didn't do any of this when I saw Equus, when Daniel Radcliffe nude at the end.
Right. And also James Norton was fully nude recently in the play he was in, and they were shots of him that people had taken by stealth. So I think it's because of that experience particularly he had that they're trying to protect. But kudos to Harrington, right? First of all, I think it's telling that you didn't know he was in it, and this is a big ensemble play. It's about three couples going through. Three interracial couples going through a lot of stuff, right? And like his partner is played by Olivia Washington, daughter of Denzel, right?
Right.
Annie McNamara's in it. You recognise her. Fisayo Akinade's in it, who's brilliant in Cucumber. So it's a proper ensemble cast. Those six couples, and there's two other key cast members who run this whole thing. I don't want to give away the whole premise because it's a really interesting, clever idea the play's based on that can easily be spoiled, and I'm not going to.
not even by then saying spoiler afterwards. So that's
definitely
that's good.
Not. I've learned my lesson. So it's a big ensemble thing.
Yeah.
And if there is a main lead role, it's probably maybe his wife, the character of his wife, Kenesha, played by Olivia Washington. But it's more ensemble. But he's Kit Harington. He's in this ensemble thing. And he gets completely naked. I thought, kudos to him.
Good for him.
You know, absolutely good for him.
Good for him and good for the audience.
And good for the audience. And he's really good in it. I mean, and the scene where he's naked is it's a shocker in every sense of the word. Like, he has to go through a lot. And so does Kenesha, played by Olivia Washington as well. But anyway, it's one of the most shocking and thought-provoking plays I've ever seen. You can hear my full review on Radio 4.
Oh my God.
But Kit Harington fans.
Kit Harington only fans.
Kit Harington only fans should be queuing up. Oh, and they've got these special shows. Is that shows of the play where you pay what you want? I mean, they're really trying to make it accessible. I think it's
the money into his like G-string? Like, how does it work?
It's like a strip show. When you book the ticket, you can pay. I don't know how it works. You can pay as little or as much as you want. So to enable. You know, why do we
throw it on the stage?
Exactly. Maybe it is like that, yeah. Anyway, so that is my tenuous theatre review, but connected to TV star Kit Harington.
Very good. Have you watched any actual telly?
Yes, I've also watched some actual telly. I wanted to mention Changing Ends Series 2. I caught up with it live, the double bill.
So that's based on Alan Carr's life, sort of semi-autobiographical, isn't it?
Indeed. Well, it's pretty autobiographical because his dad is literally manager of Northampton Town, I think, in the show, and was
still
IRL. No. They don't create a fictional team for him. You know, they pretty much stick to the facts. And but what is absolutely incredible is the kid that plays him is so brilliant. He's absolutely fantastic in that role. And I think we probably slightly underrated it because it's very enjoyable and entertaining, but it slips in a lot of stuff about the prejudices of the era, the 80s and all of that. I really like the scenes where Alan pops in as himself, his grown self, to comment on the action as well. So I really enjoyed the first three episodes of Changing Ends. And the other show I've watched that is out this week that, you know, it would have been up for review possibly is Suspect. Remember Suspect? This is the second series.
Was this the one with your man?
Yeah, well, it's with Anne-Marie Duff.
That's not who I was
Ben
thinking.
Miller.
Oh, yes.
Ben Nor was that. Yes, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Do you have the window open, Kay? It sounds like you have the window open.
Dude, you know how hot this room is? Hot. It's like really freaking hot.
We can hear all the South London ambience.
Yeah, it's very urban.
Sorry, Darren.
Blame Kay for this, Darren. She won't close the window.
Do you want me to? Okay, I will, and I'm going to pass out.
If you stop getting really sweaty, we can reopen it.
Fine. And please note, I've got very thick hair. Anyway.
You're just being mean to both of us now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
That's just rude.
An added bonus.
So it's Channel 4 show Suspect. This is the second series, and it was adapted from a Danish series.
Can I just say that Kay is now Passag fanning herself?
Brilliant. I
missed
that.
I'm so hot now.
James,
after you close the window.
Brilliant.
First of all, I'm unwell, right? So temperature is a little high anyway. But also, I cannot tell you how hot my flat is. Anyone who comes, it always goes, oh my God, how do you live in this greenhouse? But anyway, listen, I'm doing it for the quality of the pod. That's my commitment.
You can open it again. It's fine.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate the permission to, like, I'm like a dog trapped in a car right now. James, like, oh, you can crack the window a little bit. Thanks, owner.
Brilliant.
Anyway, carry on.
Sorry, Boydie.
That's okay. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Suspect, this fucking show, which I'm mentioning in this section, even though it could be in the You Were So On section, it's ambiguous, but I did watch a couple of episodes, and I just want to mention it up front because it's absolutely hilariously ridiculous. That's the thing about it is, and the first series I thought was pretty absurd, but this one ratchets up the madness of it. And it starts with Anne-Marie Duff, who's like this kind of ex-police person / psychologist. And she gets a knock on the door, and it's Dominic Cooper. I mean, he's not playing himself, but it's Dominic Cooper there.
It's literally Dominic Cooper.
Dominic.
And she gives him an impromptu, like, hypnosis session in which he reveals that he's a serial killer.
Right.
That's cuckoo bong.
Banana crackers.
Yeah. Totally cuckoo bong. Banana crackers. It's also got this weird, I don't know if it's because it's been adapted from a Danish show or something, but the dialogue is weirdly, like, oddly, I don't know, stilted.
In Danish?
No, it's not in Danish.
Wasn't the giveaway.
No.
Okay.
The whole thing is just kind of absolutely preposterous, but I found it quite entertainingly so. I think it is in the so bad it's good category, which is obviously a cliche in itself, but I found it quite entertaining. I actually wanted
What channel?
Channel 4. Starts Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday 17th of July. And the other thing I want to mention is a Channel 5 show that we didn't have time to review, and, you know, obviously all the prejudices that some of us have about Channel 5.
You can't get through James's filter.
It's the new ITV drama, isn't it? Being snobbish about Channel 5 dramas.
Yeah, of course.
But I watch.
Watch Sheridan Smith Fallen For This Time.
Sheridan Smith is not in it.
You're so bad.
It's so bad. It's the show The Night Caller, which was on
Steady
Channel
K.
5.
It's not that one.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. So,
I did.
Case closed the window. You've got to be really careful.
Yeah, exactly.
He's such a dick. I only said he was aesthetically pleasing. I don't fancy him.
Mm-hmm. A genuinely original thing because it's about, original. I mean, not original. It's not the usual, I don't think, kind of, you know, because we've seen a lot of Channel 5 dramas about women being conned. You know, there have been like a few of those.
Love rap.
Yeah, there's a certain, this is like, literally darker because it's all about this guy who drives a cab in the night shift, played by Robert Glenister, and he obsessively listens to a kind of radio presenter played by Sean Pertwee, and then he gets him, and he's kind of in an angry, like, falling down kind of state, like Michael Douglas was in for. Yeah. Things are going collapsing around him in his life, but it's really stylishly shot and well directed by Dermot Goggins, and I thought it was really effective. So you know, we prejudge sometimes. I should have maybe been more forceful in deciding to review this show.
Boy, but you must stand up to the monster.
I know, got to stand up to the monster.
At no point had I heard of this show, let alone like poo-pooed it.
I'm trying.
Oh, so in fact, Boydo, maybe it is your fault because you didn't put it on the calendar.
Yeah, it's not on the calendar, Boydo.
Wasn't on the calendar. On the fucking calendar. I apologise. So yeah, but I recommend it'll be on channel all five or whatever it's called. My five.
I would love it if PR started getting in touch saying they wanted stuff to be specifically put on the calendar, knowing that none of us enter stuff.
It's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. I can assure you. Yeah. So The Night Caller. Yeah, check it out. It's really interesting.
Okay. Kay, what have you been watching?
So I've been watching, most of my week's been taken up with the football, to be honest, but I have also watched three episodes of The Perfect Couple, which is the Netflix adaptation of Ellen Hildebrand's best-selling novel. And I did it because I was interviewing Eve Hewson, who's in it alongside Nicole Kidman and Liev Schreiber. And I'm probably not allowed to say what I think of it, but...
You're definitely not allowed to say what you think of it.
I'm smiling. That's
just
what I'm saying.
Just as your legal advisor, do not say anything about what you think about.
Yes, okay, fine. Yes, Boyd is my legal advisor.
Otherwise, you'll be banned.
That's what I've watched, and I'm excited. I'm looking forward to watching more to see what I think of the rest of it.
Yeah, no, man, that'll do.
Treading a fine line?
Yeah, I mean, usually...
Boyd's... Bulldo's literally on the edge of his seat in case I'm going to do something bad. Look.
Well, you know, because you might fly in the face of all the rules. Well, what we often do is we discuss the trailer and how good the trailer is in these situations.
Is that a workaround?
Yeah, it's a bit of a workaround, but you know, maybe too late for that.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying anything. I enjoy talking to Eve Hewson about it. That's it.
Good. I'm glad. That's not out for a long time. So you're going to have a ways to wait before you can talk about that properly. But one thing we can talk about, should you feel the need, is The Acolyte, which I've now seen the penultimate episode of The Acolyte. And all the way through, I've kind of been waiting for this to kind of step up a gear. And there's one episode in the middle where it just feels like it's starting to get going. But it does feel like it's just kind of gotten to this sort of rather sedate. I mean, to use a Disney World reference, it's a little bit more It's a Small World than it is Space Mountain, really, this show.
Hmm.
The most recent episode was just so galactically, no pun intended, anticlimactic. And we knew it was coming, like this was going to be a kind of a retelling of a story from a certain point of view.
It's like a standalone episode.
It was filling in the blanks, but it was just like, I mean, it wasn't a slog, but it was just quite a non-event. And I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop for this show. Like I'm waiting for the big reveal. I'm waiting for the fingerprint of Leslie Headland. I'm waiting to see why she wanted to make this, why she did it, why the creator of the audacious Russian doll chose this and see her influence on Star Wars. And we've got one episode to go and I'm still looking. So
I think I read in Empire magazine that didn't she say something about how she was excited by the idea of telling the story of from the nasty people's point of view?
Still waiting for that as well.
Well, do you know what? Funnily enough, because I read that piece, and then I saw it and I thought, that doesn't quite marry up with what is...
No, it doesn't. So but again, weird. I was hoping and I thought, oh, it'll switch. There'll be a switch halfway through. Something. I mean, it's... But there's one episode left.
Yeah.
So unless it's like a 4-hour finale and it completely turns it all on its head. I'm a little disappointed at the moment. But
yeah, fair enough.
Well, I guess that is all that we have been watching this week. So we should shift on to this week's listener question. Okay, what do you have for us from the bottomless Pilot TV postcard?
Can I just forewarn us, this is the question you sent around, is it right, Kate, to us?
Yeah. I'm not going to mention the line.
There's a big spoiler in it. Yeah.
Oh my God! Wait a minute! Wait!
I don't know. Let me just get this. I've not seen it.
Wait! Let me get this straight. With love and respect, are you schooling me on spoilers and not mentioning spoilers?
Well,
he is. That's exactly what's happening.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, because there is no ambiguity about it, though, because the show's finished now. Oh, has it? Wait a minute. No, it hasn't. It hasn't even finished yet. But the episode that's referred to in the listener's question
I've cut that out.
Transmitted. Good, excellent. Carry on. I don't know why I brought it up.
I don't even know what you're talking about. So I'm excited.
The question was built around a show that's ongoing, and it had a major spoiler in the question. But Kay has obviously insult to her intelligence by even bringing it up. I apologise. Go ahead.
No worries. Listen. All good. Right. The question comes from John Armstrong, who says, have been considering the career of Ben Miles and how he gives great sleazeball.
He does.
From Patrick in Coupling to the dodgy detective super in The Capture to the pilot beating up his female co-pilot in Hijack. What a dick. That's me. not John. To the amazingly creepy turn in Douglas is Cancelled. And he was asking basically, are there any other actors playing characters that we cheer when they get what's coming to them? Love the pod.
Characters that we cheer when they get what's coming to them. Mm. I mean,
I'll give a couple of mine if you're.
Yeah.
Although
up.
I should probably caveat this entire question with the fact that I feel it's going to be a very hard question to answer without dropping massive spoilers for everything we mentioned. So let's apply a certain statute of limitations to this. So nothing too recent.
Yeah, fair enough. Go on, okay.
Noted. So I was thinking of, instantly sprung to mind, Tom Hollander in White Lotus as Quentin.
Yeah, very good.
Because he was a dastardly character in the end.
And he's also dastardly in The Night Manager.
Yeah, remember? That's what I was thinking. But I couldn't think of the other show. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
He's got form for wrong'un. Big wrong'un energy. And the other one I thought was Freddie Fox, a spider in Slow Horses.
Oh, Freddie Fox. I love Freddie Fox. He is so loathsome in Slow Horses, which I'm very excited to see the new series of. Yeah, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. But also, he gets his comeuppance and then he has a kind of comeback as well. Mm. It's like, I like Freddie Fox.
Are those the new episodes up yet?
They are not, no. Oh, okay. Freddie Fox has spider web. yeah. which is a great
I love that you've given two answers. Kyle.
Yeah, okay.
That's 50% well, more than usual.
Minimum so effort, Ribeiro.
Wow. I mean,
right, first of
hey,
all.
She's
first,
not in the studio. I can say yeah, what I want. Yeah, she can't.
This
get
is
me.
What I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. There's a certain level of courage and bravery coming from my remoteness. Mm. But also, Boyd's comment, I was thinking, someone has got a hangover, haven't they?
Yeah. I've actually only got really got one example, in fact.
Oh,
although
on.
I've got.
I bet it's a good one.
I could turn the question on its head
right.
and say, which villains do you, actors as villains, do you root for? You know, because there are, I think there are particular examples of that. Like Andrew Scott in Ripley.
Yes.
And you absolutely root for him.
Well, he's an anti-hero more than a villain.
He's a fucking mass murderer.
Yeah, but he's an anti-hero. Like, because he's the central character, isn't he? He's the one you follow. So he's an anti-hero.
Sure, but he's also a psychopath.
Yes, he is. I mean, but hence the anti-part.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's like, because like your sympathies are supposed to be with that character. That's how the show's constructed.
Yes, yes. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, and fine. Okay. Nitpicking. And
now.
As Moriarty in Sherlock, you were absolutely, because you just wanted to see more and more of him. And I did miss him. Yeah. And so that hence why they managed to bring him back in one of the most tortuous and slightly contrived.
They maybe shouldn't have done.
But I still loved it because I just wanted to see more and more of him as that character. So he's an example. Anthony Hopkins, who we talk about later as Hannibal, in All the Guys, you just want him to win, basically. He wants to succeed in his cannibalism and psychopathy. So those examples where I've turned it on its head. The other example, actual answer to the question where I didn't need to turn it on its head, is Sacha Dhawan, who's the master in Doctor Who, the last master in the Chris Chibnall era.
Last master, not taskmaster.
The last master, exactly, not taskmaster. Oh my God, I love... I've never said this, have I, how the discussion of taskmaster on the Empire podcast is hilarious. Chris Hewitt suddenly become a massive fan of taskmaster.
He's now... Right? But he's doing what I do. He's watching it from the very beginning so he can get the larger story arc.
I mean, insane. There is no larger story arc. It's completely ridiculous. But the fact that James K has to sit there listening to not only, like, if we brought that up in this podcast, he would consider it to be...
Oh, he would go mad.
Yeah, well, exactly. He'd be considered to be a wrong thing to do and not in our core, you know, offering. To
true.
Instance. But
he would tell us off.
Hewitt's now talking about it in the film podcast, in the Empire film podcast.
It's shocking.
It is shocking.
listen, before we move on, I've just got to say, we had a listener write in, and actually it was James Drury. He said, "Hi, after Chris Hewitt schooled James on the ins and outs of Task Master on the Empire podcast. Please, can you and Boyd get him to watch and react to an episode?" So,
well, I think we've done it before.
I've never seen it. So at some point,
even back in the
cultural exchange, not with that. Once we finished House of the Dragon, I would be prepared to take on an episode of Taskmaster.
Guys,
great.
Okay. Yes, this is progress.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah.
Well done, James Drury.
Anyway, back to us. Sacha Dhawan as the master. That's how I got. I don't even know how I got to.
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say what happened there. But do you remember he was also in that absolutely demented thriller, Wolf? Do you remember that?
Yes.
In which he played an even more insane villain than he does as the master in Doctor Who. And he goes madly over the top in these villainous roles, Sacha Dhawan. He has the time of his life and he is very entertaining. And it's very enjoyable. And he gets his comeuppance in both of those shows, both of those characters.
I think one of the most cathartic comeuppances on the small screen is Aidan Gillen in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Because you've waited like eight seasons for Littlefinger to meet his end, to essentially be found out, because he's like Captain Chaos is a ladder. Like, he is the ultimate schemer. He is behind absolutely everything. He is the most duplicitous, the least trustworthy all the way through. And he gets away with it time and time and time and time again. And the worst things are the things he did to Sansa. And then you think he's got away with it again. You think he's driven a wedge between the sisters. And then that sort of last pivot at the 11th hour. And he's desperately floundering around for more lies and he's desperately seeking allies at the last moment. It's like, no, mate, you're done. You're cooked.
Desperately seeking allies.
Desperately
seeking
Sansa.
Sansa.
Very good.
No, he didn't. He has done bad things to Sansa, but yes, he gets her. I mean, obviously, Kay, you will know, having watched through Game of Thrones now, so you're all too aware.
Yeah. It's still on the to-watch list.
Yeah. Okay, right. I guess we have kind of answered that question. If you'd like your question read out on this podcast or indeed on Pilot Plus, do send them to us, or specifically to Kay at Kay Ribeiro on the Twitters, or to @PilotTVPod on Twitter or on Instagram.
Or the subreddit you monitor, don't
or
you?
Chuck it on the subreddit, absolutely, which is the Pilot TV Podcast subreddit. Do feel free to jump on there as well if you are a Redditor. Right, it is time now for some guests. And Lady in the Lake lands on Apple this week, but it's embargoed, so we will be reviewing that one on Pilot Plus. But that's okay, because we have the stars of the show, specifically Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram, and they're here to pull back the curtain a little bit for you. Now, as you've heard on the What We've Been Watching section in previous episodes, Boydie, you have watched a few of these, so please bring our listeners up to speed on Lady in the Lake.
It's a 7-part series based on the 2019 Laura Lippman novel with Natalie Portman and the aforementioned Moses Ingram, who was in The Queen's Gambit. Can you remember The Queen's Gambit?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It was brilliant. And it's basically about how Portman's character she's like a wannabe journalist, and she meets up with Moses Ingram's character, who's a struggling housewife, Cleo. And basically, Natalie Portman's character is fixated on Cleo's character's death, and she kind of takes it upon herself to investigate. It's partly about, so she decides to kind of, you know, add some excitement to her life by investigating this mystery. It's also interestingly it's partly about the Jewish culture that she's in as well, and there's a lot of interesting stuff about what it's like being Jewish in this particular time, etc. So it's interesting. Yeah, there you go.
Well, you can hear more about that now from Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram, talking here to Beth Webb. We interrupt this interview to give you a quick caveat. Now, as you will hear a little bit later on in this show, I had to run out to do a little bit of tech support on the microphone for this interview. Now, suffice it to say, in the annals of interviews, everything that could go wrong with this interview did go wrong. You won't hear any of it in the actual interview, but suffice it to say, there was a non-working microphone, there was an interview slot that got missed, there was a birthday party involved, there were a lot of factors at play here. And the upshot of it all is that after delays and technical difficulties, there was only about 6 minutes left to do this interview. So bless her, heroic Beth managed to cram in a very quick Lady in the Lake interview into a 6-minute window, and not, frankly, the much longer one that we had originally planned for. So this is an unexpectedly truncated conversation with Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram. Enjoy, if briefly.
This series is based on Laura Lippman's book of the same name. I wanted to know if there was, or what it was that you saw in the story that she'd written that you hadn't seen before, perhaps.
Well, when I read the book, I was so amazed by the portrayal of a woman at this time trying to start something new in her life. And she had a really amazing way of narrating it from different points of view. Each chapter has like a different person, and they kind of hand the baton of like who's telling the story. And I thought that was really powerful of, you know, who gets to tell the story. And the big departure from the book, which Laura was so generous to allow Alma to veer from the book, was in making the story much more a two-hander about these two women, where Cleo was as a full, whole human, which Moses so beautifully embodied.
Moses, you're obviously a small screen queen, if you will, but Natalie, this was obviously your first time embarking on, you know, serialized storytelling. What else was compelling to you about this? And do you see this as a new juncture for your career? Is this something else that you'd like to do moving forward?
It's such a luxury to get to have 7 hours mm-hmm. of space to explore a character. You can go into so much more detail. And also working with someone like Alma Harrell, who's just so inspiring mm-hmm. and incredible on a daily basis, just always encouraging the most creativity, the most magic on set. I would definitely do it again if I could, you know, do it with Alma.
And Moses, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Cleo, who just wears so many hats. I'm fascinated more than anything about the different jobs she has. These are kind of very much jobs of the time, but then also what she represents within Baltimore at the time as well. And I wanted to know, you know, outside of the book, what kind of research you were doing. I know you're obviously Baltimore born and bred as well. Kind of how were you looking outside of the book to prepare for this role?
Yeah, you know, I sort of had to just hit the ground running. And a lot of times I prefer experiences like that. I mean, time is great when you have it, but it's nice when it's short because there's no time to think about whether it's right or wrong. You really just have to throw yourself at it and hope that the thing that's supposed to be there will be there. And I'm so happy with the way everything came out.
Amazing. And Natalie, your grandma was from Baltimore, I understand, as well. So I don't know, I'd love to know how your heritage worked its way into the bones of this show.
Yeah, it was absolutely an exploration for me of what my grandmother's community felt like, what my grandmother's experience as a woman in her 40s during the 1960s might have been like within that community. The obstacles she might have faced, that was definitely a piece of it. And I mean, my grandfather changed his name to sound less Jewish, you know, in the same way that, you know, many of these characters are trying to assimilate to, you know, as a survival mechanism. And it really helped me have insight into it, having that kind of family experience.
Wonderful. And it manifests at times in such a wonderful kind of celebratory way through these incredible set pieces with the dancing and the costumes and the like razzle dazzle, for want of a better word. What were those days like on set where you were doing the choreography and the, you know, all the lights and wonderfulness?
It was super fun.
Yeah. I mean, you really just can't beat it. You know, there, also, I have to say, there are so many people it takes to make a monster of something like this happen, and to get such vivid, beautiful images like the ones that we have in the series. And so shout out to all the amazing people who really, really came in and got the job done on our crew. Really, really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, the costumes and the sets and the special effects. And I mean, you're so right to highlight the, you know, the dozens, hundreds of people that yeah. came together.
I mean,
kind of the beautiful thing about the work we do is how many people come together to help the director's vision come to life.
And you need every one of them.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, guys, thank you so much for your time today. It's a really wonderful show. Thanks.
That was Natalie Portman and Moses Ingram. Time now for this week's news. Where to even begin? We had some trailers this week. So I'm going to wonder, Boydie, did you see, I'm going to assume, Kate, that you did not watch the Agatha All Along trailer. But Boydie, did you watch it?
No.
You didn't watch it. Excellent. Well, this is a brilliant discussion. I'm going to say I watched it and was very surprised by what it was tonally. So it starts in a different... You know, I say, I'm not going to spoil it for people necessarily, but Catherine Hahn's character returns, Agatha, All Along. But it has a horror vibe to it. It feels slightly different. There's threads of humour in it, but it has quite an intense vibe. And it's made me a lot more excited about that show, which, I'll be honest, felt a little bit superfluous when it was announced. But now I'm on board. Oh, on board for Agatha All Along.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm excited, yeah. I'll watch the trailer.
You'll consider maybe
watching the trailer, okay, and then definitely watch the show.
I mean, it was no Gladiator 2 trailer, but we can't talk about that on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, no, we can't.
No.
It's illegal.
Did you go to the Gladiator 2 trailer event?
Absolutely not.
No. Isn't it mad? It is mad, isn't it? They have events, launches of trailers.
Well, they're doing it more and more, aren't they?
I mean, it's lovely, and I'm sure there were canapés and little drinks and stuff, but I kind of felt like, well, it'll be on the internet like an hour afterwards, so I'm fine.
I mean, if it was a high-quality canapé and I was in town...
That's fair.
Then perhaps.
That is fair.
Yeah.
There's another film, big film coming up, where they've got an event where they're showing like footage of it, but not the whole film. Just show us the whole effing film. Anyway, sorry. Rant over.
He feels very strongly about that.
Yeah. But oh no, I'm excited about that.
Okay, I've got some Jason Watkins news. His drama, ITV drama, McDonald and Dodds, has a confirmed return date. So that last aired, I think, in 2022, and it's now been announced that the fourth season will premiere on Sunday, the 21st of July at 8 p.m.
Well, that would have been in our Also Out section, Kay, as well, just FYI.
Well, Boyd, listen.
No, I mean, you know.
I'm straight out the traps.
Today.
If you listen. There's no stopping me.
I'm going to say there's been another trailer. Did you watch the trailer to Time Bandits, which is Taika Waititi's spin on the classic Terry Gilliam movie? And this is on Apple TV Plus. It's incoming. Lisa Kudrow, isn't it?
Yes. Well, this is coming very soon. We'll be reviewing this next
week. We will
week.
Be reviewing it very, very soon.
So not only have I seen not seen the trailer, but I have seen the first episode.
Because
we were covering it in Heat Magazine again. So both of these things are very imminent things coming out that you've picked off.
Very, very chippy today.
All I'll say is, all I'll say is, what did you make of the trailer then? That's interesting.
So I must admit, and this will come up, I am not a Time Bandit stan. I'm not a Time Bandit. I'm not a stan of that film because I've never seen it.
Oh dear.
I have seen it
and I'm not a fan of it.
Okay, fine. So I don't really care that Taika Waititi is doing his own film. It's not blasphemy to me. I'm like, do what you want. And Lisa Kudrow has a very distinct cadence and line delivery,
yes,
which is always quite similar when she does things. And that's not to say she's a one-trick pony, but I quite enjoy her delivery of stuff. So from the trailer, I enjoy, and I mean the literal trailer, not the quote-unquote trailer. I mean the literal trailer. Mm. I actually found her quite entertaining. That said, because of the device that it is a young boy, it felt like it skews younger than I will like. But we'll see. We'll see. Judgment reserved until we review it.
Yes. It is lavish. I'll tell you that for nothing. It looks, I mean, it's Apple, isn't it?
I'm sure they chucked money at it left, right, and center.
They've chucked a lot of money on it. It's also co-created by Ian Morris of the Inbetweeners fame.
Indeed.
And the dude from Flight of the Conchords. What's his name?
Noel Fielding.
No,
it's definitely not. Jermaine Clement? Jermaine Clement.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
right.
Clement, Waititi and Ian Morris have created it together. So it's got pretty impressive credentials.
Okay.
Mm.
What else have we got?
I've got some Agatha Christie news. So
Agatha Christie Blue... all along.
Huh? Oh no, I just got that. No.
You look genuinely bewildered there. I'm glad we could see your face.
I thought, how have I managed to fuck up that name? So Edward Blumel has been announced as joining the cast of Netflix's upcoming Agatha Christie adaptation of The Seven Dials Mystery. And he'll be joining Mia McKenna Bruce, who's also starring in it. And this is going to be written by Chris Chibnall. Of Doctor Who fame. So I'm excited. You know, I like an Agatha Christie. I mean, I would say this doesn't have Poirot in it. So immediately I'm less excited than I would have been, but still.
Wait a minute. Is James buying something on the internet?
I heard a buzz.
It wasn't me. I think it was you.
It was a buzz. It wasn't my. That must be. It's Kay's buzz. Look at her face. Look at the guilty face.
Oh. But meanwhile, I'm looking at James right now, Ken. He's got his credit card out. What's he doing?
Oh my God. James?
Are you buying something from the Supreme sale?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Bought some limited edition Supreme trainers.
Have we reversed roles?
Yeah, that's it. I'm in a queue to get kicks.
I don't know what's going on.
Do you know what I think it is? I think he's finally stumping out for a present for us. That's what are you getting us, James? Yeah.
I was ordering the cake for the podcast because I've come to understand now that Kay, the chance of you getting us the cake is absolutely zero. So it falls to me to provide the cake.
Listen, don't, because I'm just going to give you a little update on that. I went on today because I thought, let me see how far away we are from this cake. Because it's not, you know, there's no reluctance on my part to buy the cake.
You're blaming it on the listeners. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm being straight up about that. I said all along, when we reach 2,000 reviews on Chartable, I would treat James and Boyd to cake. Yeah. Maybe not Pat Val. We were going to go for...
No, we were going to get Cray Bakes to make it, and it was going to be a slice of all sorts of different things in this weird concoction.
A third of what we all like.
Exactly.
Do you want to know what we're on?
What?
1,858. So all I'd say, James, is that cake's never coming.
No, it's not.
You're going to be bikini ready. You're going to be faster, like in a state to hit the beach.
That's disappointing.
For.
It's not going up as much as I like. Can everyone leave a review, please? Like all of you who've not left a review. That's like
2,000.
We need quite a few. So
we're on 1,858.
If you enjoy this podcast and you have never left us a 5-star review, please, I'm hungry.
Dude, I would say even if you don't enjoy the podcast, just do it anyway. Yeah. Like, stop being lazy. Yeah. Just get on. Just hop on 5 stars.
Jump on there. Quick 5.
we're not fussed about authenticity of reviewing.
Not at all. Whether you like the podcast or not, just give us 5. It's fine.
Yeah. Here's a piece of TV news that will shock and appall you. And I only mention it again, it's not core pilot TV subject matter. So, you know, steel yourself, James. But it's just, we cannot ignore this announcement that came this week that the rumours are true. And Discovery Plus channel has commissioned a 5-part docuseries / reality show on the Rees-Moggs.
Oh,
meet the Rees-Moggs.
Yes,
yes. This is it's literally the Jacob Rees-Mogg. I'm trying not to be political. The now ex
haunted pencil. Yes, you could say it.
The man of the meme, one of the most famous memes, where he's lying down in the House of Commons, literally falling asleep while all goes on around
pencil.
Him.
That's brilliant.
He and his family, and he's got six kids, and that's part of the whole intrigue about him.
Yeah.
Him and his wife.
What, that he got to have six kids?
Yes.
Jacob Rees-Mogg has had sex. This is
yeah, amazing. I mean, is that what you're saying? That's six, brilliant. A great
six
observation.
Six at least six times. So that will be arriving, I think, later this year. And it was, again, this has been a rumour. They're really making a reality show. And I remember on the election night coverage, someone said, if you're wondering why there's a camera with Jacob Rees-Mogg, it's because they're making
Shut
a documentary.
Up.
And I'm like, really? Are they?
No.
So it's actually happening. I mean, appalling scene.
The recently unemployed Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yes.
But that's not the most exciting TV/politics crossover news.
Okay.
I know what you're going to say. Merkel.
Yes.
Merkel, the detective drama.
Yes.
Which imagines that former Chancellor Angela Merkel is now a kind of an Agatha Christie-esque Miss Marple type detective solving crimes.
Yeah.
I'm sort of here for that batshit like concept.
It's amazing.
Oh, completely. We should acknowledge Glenn on Twitter. What's it called now? X.
Twitter. Call it Twitter.
Alerted us.
Always Twitter, boy, don't.
Yeah. GK Kent 81. He spotted it and alerted us to it.
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a wind up.
Same.
I thought it was a fake video, but it's actually real.
It's real, yeah. So it'd be like the equivalent of doing creating a drama bit around Theresa May.
Yeah.
Investigating crime somewhere.
Theresa investigates.
Yeah. Yeah, it's whack.
Yeah, I hope it's like a cozy crime thing as well. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah,
it's
going to
be
perfect.
Incredible.
Like Whitstable Pearl.
Oh, it'd be like, but the Theresa May one could be excellent. She could be like running through fields of wheat and then like bringing suspects back.
Yeah. Who would you rather?
Which turned out to be lettuce.
I mean, Theresa May is the closest approximation because she actually was Prime Minister.
Yes.
Believe it or not, you may not remember. But who's the other one? The other one that was Prime Minister for like 10 minutes.
What, Liz Truss?
Liz Truss.
No, it's
well,
Truss. I got
You're
it confused
of Truss
when I said the letters.
You said the letters.
Yeah.
Truss.
Yeah. And then you could stretch it to people who want to be Prime Minister, like Suella Braverman.
Right, I'm moving on. I can't.
Right, we
Sorry.
Can't. Right, okay. So Boyd, see what Boyd's done there? He's tried to sort of subvert the podcast and make it political.
Yeah.
Under my nose.
I got good feedback from my political thing.
Did you?
You slagged off.
for your...
said, listeners will be bored by my like 5 minute maximum political thing. And that fact, I got a lot of acclaim.
It turns out they were pleased.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay,
just wanted to mention that.
While we're going off piste with stuff, James, for some reason, I feel like do you like K-pop?
Do I like K-pop?
I feel like you're the kind of guy who likes K-pop.
Just because I like Taylor Swift, I like K-pop.
Yeah.
I could not name. Oh, no, I think I could. Is it? I'm going to try. I'm going to get this wrong. Is it JLS? Is that the
no,
K-pop?
JLS.
JLS.
No.
Most definitely not
Korean. Have I fucked it up? Okay.
Okay,
fine.
Listen. I'm going to skip over this.
There's a K-pop band which is three initials, right?
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
What are the initials?
Yeah,
and do you know?
I can't remember what it is.
Oh, at least you don't know either.
They did a collab with Coldplay, and they actually, Coldplay sang that song at the Glastonbury Festival, but I can't remember the name of that.
Well, I saw the Michael J. Fox bit, but I did not see.
Yeah, there was the K-pop bit as well.
Okay.
Yeah, with this actor that none of us can remember because we're so old people.
We're so down with the kids.
Well, listen, I was just bringing it up because basically it's BTS, by the way.
BTS.
Yeah.
The unfortunate BTS is like a film industry lingo for behind the scenes pictures. So when you say it's a BTS, I just assume it's like a picture of someone with a camera.
Brilliant.
Anyway, the reason why I was just briefly mentioning it is because the BBC is launching a new reality season called a series called Made in Korea, the K-pop Experience.
Oh my God. So it's like a BTS of BTS.
Yeah.
This is
exactly.
incredible.
Yeah.
And
there's already been a BTS film about BTS as well. But anyway, carry on, Kay.
Has there?
Yeah, I think so.
Netflix. Okay, the other thing I briefly wanted to mention is that Prince Harry and Hugh Grant are making an ITV documentary on the phone hacking scandal called...
Well, I don't like to contradict you, Kay. I don't think they're making it. They're appearing in it.
Are set to appear. Sorry, Boyd. I can't... Yeah.
No.
They're not... Although, actually, that would be an exciting prospect.
I mean,
Prince Harry has got...
Hugh Grant behind the camera, Prince Harry directing him. Okay, Hugh, go over there.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility.
No, absolutely.
In fact, does Prince Harry have his own production company or not? Have I just made that
does.
Up?
Of course he does.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's called Sneaky.
Very good. Wow.
Anyway.
That's a deep cut pilot TV reference.
Yeah, that is very deep cut. That is. Yeah.
I don't know if I said this, but it's going to be called Tabloids on Trial, apparently. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think
it's in the TV we just finished, Kay. This is, which I might have to shoehorn in somehow, too, because that was a very late announcement by ITV that was coming. Mm. Yeah, it's on in a couple of weeks' time. But very interesting that's going to be. I agree.
We have a date, by the way, for Severance Season 2.
Yes.
January the 17th, yes. So next year. Yeah, I mean, and there was a little trailer as well.
I was going, what a long time to wait. It feels like years. It feels like about 5 years ago that Severance was on. Even by streaming high-end TV standards, it feels like a long time.
I do feel a little bit like you have to strike sometimes a bit while the iron's hot, and it feels like the iron has cooled a little bit on Severance because it was like the show of the year for everyone, but it feels like it doesn't get talked about as much now, which is a shame because it is fabulous.
2022 it came out, 2023, 24, February 2022, so it'll be
3 years.
3 years. I mean, you know, I guess Stranger Things is about that, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, but then what was the, like, between season one and two of Stranger Things? Wasn't 3 years,
no,
was it?
No, it wasn't. No. The lengthening came after.
Exactly.
So
now that, I mean, they're all middle-aged, aren't they, the kids now?
That so doesn't sound right at all, yeah. Let's skip over that.
Yeah, let's leave the lengthening alone and move on, shall we?
I wanted to mention the news about my football-going friend.
Oh, Boydie. Saka.
Yeah, I know.
See, he's learning. Yeah. I feel so proud of him.
No, Brendan Gleeson, who came to see Arsenal v Aston Villa, remember, with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Donal.
Brendan's first bit of major casting news for ages. In fact, since that brilliant film he was in, The Banshees of Inisherin, he's going to be in the Spider-Man Noir series.
Is he now?
Yes, at Amazon.
Who's he playing?
So, Spider-Man.
Gleeson will star in the series opposite previously announced Nick Cage.
Yep.
And Lamorne Morris, the show now titled Spider Noir, it's formally ordered to a series in May with Cage in the lead role, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Amazon declined to comment on Gleason's casting, so we don't know who's going to play. Oh, won't it? Per the official logline, the show tells the stories of an aging down on his luck private investigator, Cage, in 30s New York, forced to grapple with his past life as the city's one and only superhero. Exact details on Gleason's roles, playing more than one role, are being kept under wraps. But he'll reportedly play the show's villain.
Ooh, I bet he'll play the villain and then the evil twin, like another, like himself, basically, a twin character.
Yeah.
That's my prediction, guys.
Good prediction.
Remember it.
Okay, we'll note that down. We've seen that Renée Zellweger is going to star in Jane Smith, which is a sort of, apparently it's a legal thriller. It's going to be on HBO Max or Max, depending on what they're calling it in any given day. But this is from a novel by James Patterson. And not to defame James Patterson, because I don't know the ins and outs of this, but I always felt like James Patterson stopped writing his own novels many, many years ago, because it's always like James Patterson and other person, including...
Isn't it Bill Clinton?
Bill Clinton, yes.
Yeah.
Like lots
I think he's also... Hasn't he written a book with Michael Crichton, who's actually dead?
Absolutely.
I think I saw that the other day.
Maybe Smith. He channeled him.
I don't know what happens with James Patterson, but I used to really like his Alex Crox. Alex Crox. Now that is a detective series I would watch. It's Alex Crox, and he just wears Crocs and solves crimes wearing Crocs.
So weird.
Crocs and crimes.
Yeah, that's it. Amazing. Now, Alex Crox, the Alex Crox novels. Yes. I like those a lot.
I think James Patterson at one point, I don't know if he still is, at one point was the biggest selling novelist in the world.
It's possible. It is possible. He used to churn them out a lot. But not connected to James Patterson. There's a bit of For All Mankind news. Season 5 has cast Mireille Enos.
Yes.
So joining Season 5 as someone.
Yes. By the way, I meant to ask you this. Have you seen the Fly Me to the Moon film?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Because it's intriguingly similar to For All Mankind.
A bit For All Mankind.
It's For All Mankind because it's space race stuff. Yeah, and it's interesting that Apple, it's an Apple film. Obviously, an Apple is the home of For All Mankind.
Yeah.
Just like about get away that because of the For All Mankind connection.
Just about, Boydie. That's a yellow card for you.
Well,
yes.
Football reference. Football
James.
Reference.
He's on fire.
It'll be interesting what happens when I get the red card.
That's true. I'll send you off. Yes, but to be fair, Mireille Enos, I should say, is actually playing Celia Boyd. Boyd.
What a great character.
No relation. And she's a member of the Peacekeeper Security Force, which, and I know what you're thinking, Peacekeepers, it's Farscape. No, it's not. She is the Peacekeeper Security Force on Mars. She is not, in fact, a Sebastian.
I zoned out.
We all zoned out, I think.
Have I just killed news? Are we at the end of news now?
I think we came to
DNR.
DNR, that's it. We've done it. DNR for BTS. Right, we are done with news. That's it. Let's move on to this week's reviews. First up, we have Mr. Big Stuff on Sky, which begins with a carpet salesman getting a cheeky wank out the back of Halfords and generally goes downhill from there. This one sees Danny Dyer, no relation, as the relative from hell dropping in on his estranged brother, the aforementioned wanker. Kay, would you take a trip round the back of Halfords for this one?
Yes, I would, James. I think you're being uncharitable, as always, with anything that's vaguely... You know, I know what you have, like, a really high benchmark in terms of prestige, comedy dramas, etc. So
yeah.
This prestige. This is good. I enjoyed this. I did, because I think you just said, but if you didn't, Ryan Sampson actually wrote this. So he's from Brassic. He's really good in Brassic, actually. And he wrote and stars in this. He plays Glenn. And they're basically, him and Danny play brothers, estranged brothers, and they're completely polar opposites. So Glenn is like this kind of dweeby loser character who works, as you say, in the carpet shop. He gets wanked off in the first episode, which instantly sets out the tone.
It does. It is literally the first scene.
Yeah.
And he's, yeah, but he's like this lovable loser, and like he's constantly overlooked for promotion by his boss, played by Adrian Scarborough, who was the fantastic Pete in Gavin and Stacey. I should say, actually, Glenn's fiance is Harriet Webb, aka Cousin Shannon from Big Boys, who both her and Adrian are really good, I think, supporting characters. Very funny and well cast. Anyway, so basically everything's going quite well for Glenn. He's trying to live out the suburban dream, but it all goes to shit when his brother turns up out of the blue, and he is a beer swilling, C bomb dropping, yeah, good for nothing. But he has a heart. He has a good heart, right? So he's a layered character. James, stop smirking.
I can see. Can I just say? Sorry to interrupt. I've got two versions of James. One in front of me in IRL. One on my screen, and the double smirk of both of them is quite a lot to deal with. Carry on.
Do you know what he is? He's a smirky McSmirkerson.
Yeah, I am. Yeah? It's true. Can I just say, Danny Dyer then, playing against type, he uses the word trotters twice in the first episode.
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
Listen.
Carry on.
Yeah, but anyway, so it's clear that the brothers have baggage, you know, some history there. We don't know what's going on, but they sort of call an uneasy truce. But Danny's character, Lee, is clearly hiding something from him. I have to say, right, I enjoyed this. I thought it was full of zingy one-liners. I think that Danny, it's good to see Danny in a comedy role. Whatever you think of that comedy, James, it's good to see him leaning into that. And I think he really embraced it, because it's a really funny character. And as you say, it's like, is an exaggerated version, some of it, of himself, but he also, this character has a real nutty energy, which he really goes for. And we see that particularly in a very amusing spoon scene at the end of Ep 1, which I enjoyed. I know you're going to say you hated it. I enjoyed it.
I would say that came out of left field a little bit. Use another football metaphor there. But that was, I was not expecting to see that.
Yes, and right. I described it as it was like a fever dream in the best possible way. Like, it was funny, it was amusing. But yeah, I just think it's really good. And I really think it's good because Ryan actually wrote the role kind of for him.
Oh, I mean,
so apparently they...
shock me. absolutely knock my socks off with that revelation.
I was going to be more, you know...
He's not acting, it's just Danny Dyer.
James is launching
acting. Look, obviously I know it is heavily influenced by his character, but I'm saying I think it's nice for Ryan because I need to double check this. I think this is his first thing he's written solo, and he met Danny on the set of Plebs. They got on, and then Ryan thought, oh, it would be really funny. Like, can you imagine if we were brothers type vibe? And then he wrote this thing specifically for him, as you know. And but then someone told him, I don't know, like an exec or something, that, oh no, like Danny's contracted to do EastEnders, so like it's impossible. And then that weekend, I think Ryan happened to go past the newsstand and see the front covers, which is that Danny had just left EastEnders, so it felt fortuitous. So
what came
I like
first?
The story.
What came first, the trotters or the script from Ryan Sampson? Because I wonder whether is Danny Dyer improvising the trotter scenes,
or was it written specifically to reference the David Cameron reference?
Exactly. You can't work out. I mean, obviously it's clearly written especially with him in mind, but it is like a kind of slight twist on the Danny Dyer persona we've grown to know and love in some cases. Obviously not yours, James. I think Ryan Sampson is a really talented guy. He's a really interesting, a really kind of unusual, his vibe, his energy. So I, of course, did a set visit to Plebs years ago.
Did you?
Yes, in Bulgaria on the set, because they have this ancient Rome set in Bulgaria, which they film loads and loads of stuff, including possibly the show, which we'll be talking about later, but I'm not sure if I haven't checked. But yeah, there's this massive...
Did you have a cameo in a toga?
Yeah, I had a cameo. No, I had a cameo. I did have a cameo in a toga.
Hang on, is this absolutely true?
Yeah, haven't I mentioned this before?
I don't think
you
have.
Oh my God.
Not for a long time. I've probably mentioned it.
Did you wear, like, do you have laurels on your head and stuff?
No, I played, I'll tell you what I played. wait, I played the referee in a boxing match.
Oh my God.
Pontius Boidus.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Someone needs to unearth this footage and put it up somewhere.
I need a still.
It's not it won't be difficult to find. Yeah. It's in Plebs in the boxing match episode, wherever it was. Yeah.
What are you doing on this podcast? You should be full time acting by now. You started on Plebs, Gavin and Stacey.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it was a whole thing. He did a whole set visit slash cameo in the thing. But my point is, Ryan Stevens is an absolutely lovely guy, but he's got a really interesting, unusual energy about him and loads of ideas. And he in that show, he's demented in Plebs. Like, I always thought his performance was so weird and bizarre. And I remember, you know, fascinated by him. And I think by and large, I know we're getting ready for the kind of full-on James attack on
the show. Can't we just cut his mic?
It's so not up his street. Again, many times I watch things, I think, "Oh God, what's James going to say about this?" But I was fully engaged with him. I did really enjoy. I agree with UK that particularly Harriet Webb she's brilliant. I think she's so funny in it. It's just sitting around. She's just in bed for no reason. Like when Ryan Sampson's character comes home to see her and everything. And I think and Agent Scarborough's really good as well, as you mentioned as well. And it's quite fun to see Danny Dyer riffing essentially on himself, on his past roles and on his persona and all of that. And as I always say when we do anything with Danny Dyer, he's actually a really good actor, because if I saw him on stage in Harold Pinter play, Pinter loved him. He was one of Harold Pinter's favourite actors, blah, blah, blah. He can act. He's a proper actor. It's just that he's become as much a kind of personality figure as he has been known for his acting. But he's funny in this show. Do you know what, though? My one criticism of the first episode, I was totally taken out of it by the spoon scene. I just thought it smacked too much for me of, we're going to put a set piece thing in. We're going to make this thing. Yeah, you know how in Gavin and Stacey, remind me of Gavin and Stacey, there is a Gavin and Stacey-esque tone to this, by the way, I think. In Gavin and Stacey, they incorporate these similar moments to that into the script brilliantly. That's one of the cleverest things they do in a way. So you might have, you know, in Gavin and Stacey, the characters doing a song with each other. There's one scene where James Corden is singing in the, do you remember that, in the car and, you know, to Gavin.
Yeah, isn't there also, doesn't Nessa do it? Like, does she Islands in the Stream or something?
Yeah, exactly. Although they incorporate them very cleverly, so they don't stick out. This for me stuck out like a sore thumb. Mm. We've come up with this kind of funny dance routine. Let's do this. Whereas the rest of it, I know it would be interesting again with James thinks it's silly or not and all that. The rest of it was actually, I thought, it was kind of faintly plausible within the context of James's face. It was brilliant. Faintly plausible within the tone of the show, which is to some extent a bit silly and exaggerated. Go ahead,
it's
James.
It's fun. It's entertaining.
But I enjoyed it. Bottom line is, I enjoyed it. I will watch more. And I particularly admire Ryan Sampson. He's very good, very talented.
Boy, I'm going to pitch to you an idea.
Yeah.
Reality TV series.
Yeah.
In a house. It's me.
Yeah.
Danny Dyer.
Yeah.
Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things and Harriet Dyer from Colin from Accounts.
Brilliant. Okay.
And it's called like Dyer Warning or something.
Yes. Do it.
And we have to watch, I don't know, it's like Gogglebox.
Meet the
Dyers. Don't know. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You should
funny. Down with the Dyers.
It's funny or dire. That's it, right? Yeah, I'm spitballing this now.
Yeah.
And we have to, it's something to do with comedy and trying to make people laugh. I don't know.
Both Danny Dyers. You got
That's right. Yeah, both Danny Dyers.
Him and his daughter.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is absolutely, get someone
that's
on
it.
Board.
Let's
now.
Do it.
Isn't there a footballer, someone Dyer? Is there?
Kieran Dyer. Yeah, it's different spelling, but fine. Yeah, Kieran Dyer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Get all the Dyers together.
Yeah, definitely. What great idea.
Yeah,
anyway,
let's do
it. What do you think of...
I mean, look, I am not going to sit here and just spend an hour ragging on this show, because it's just not for me. It's no disrespect to Ryan Sampson. It's not for me, is it? Like, it's a broad comedy that's rather silly, and I hated every solitary second of it, because of course I did, because it's just not my bag. In fact, it is the opposite of my bag. Whatever my bag is, this is very far away from it.
James? Did you like the character of Kirsty? Did you find her funny?
No.
Okay.
I did not.
I was
amused by the spoon sequence, because it was so utterly cuckoo bong out of left field mad that I just didn't see it coming, and I wasn't quite sure what I was watching. I was like, what is going on?
Do you know what? That took a week to rehearse, by the way.
Did it? I'm not surprised. Yeah. It was really well done. I will say there's a solid amount of good physical comedy in this, and like the moments where it's like, even if it's something quite simple, like one character ducking outside to hide from another, the way those are blocked and staged, that actually I thought quite effective. I thought those were actually quite well done. So I think technically, actually, it works really well. And if this is your sense of humour, then there's probably something to like here.
He says, approving.
Do you know what?
It's just not for me.
I'm recommending that Sky just clip up the quote of James Dyer going, it's well done.
Yeah, rather than the bit where he says, I hated every minute.
I did hate every minute of it. But, you know, that's not that surprising
for me. Let's skip over that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant then. That is Mr. Big Stuff, which is on Sky Max, in fact. Yeah. When is it on, Boyd?
Sky Max and now, of course. Wednesday, 17th of July, 2024, 9 p.m. And the whole series will be available on Sky, wherever it's called, Catch Up, etc.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just turning the pages of the magazine very loud.
Yes, you are. Sorry. Next up this week, we have The Jetty on BBC One. Now, this is created by Kat Jones, and this sees Jenna Coleman as the rather excellently named DC Ember Manning, who investigates a crime on the waterfront in her Lancashire home, only to end up looking into a cold case that may or may not have ripples back into her own life. Now, while it is tonally, I would say, a million miles away from Mr. Big Stuff, it does have some thematic similarities, as it features, among other things, someone wanking off a horse, though not, crucially, out the back of Halfords. So that's nice. Boydie.
Spoiler alert.
Please.
Where's the horse wanking?
You missed, wait a minute.
How did you miss that scene?
Yeah, what's more surprising? James spoiling that moment or you not noticing that moment?
It's not a plot point.
It's
more of a mood setting scene.
Yeah, if I'd have said it, it would be considered a spoiler.
No, but you'd have said spoiler at the end of it, so that's fine.
Yeah. Boydie. James missed it though, apparently. Kate didn't notice.
Yeah. Boydie, please peer behind the curtain. Because Piers like it's like a jetty, isn't it? It's a bit similar. Yeah, it's like thematic.
It's not your finest.
No, it's not the best. Look, I'm tired. Leave me alone.
I went to the launch of the jetty, the screening queue, and I didn't host it.
That's
so
a good,
I did
good joke, Boyd. Launch of the jetty.
Oh, yeah,
that's
good. Yes, yeah, thanks. Good. I went to the launch of the jetty, and it was the writer was there. And
was there a horse?
No, Jenna was there, and someone else was hosting it. But I was sat there thinking, please ask about the horse wanking scene. Please ask about the horse wanking scene. And I was thinking, and then obviously I could have myself. Put up a hand.
Journalist that you
but
are.
Because
yes.
There's something about, because I host loads of these Q&As, obviously, as regular listeners will know.
You thought it'd be inappropriate to bring up equestrian masturbation.
In a way,
can't be the one to ask that question.
No,
you
exactly.
Can't.
And all the questions, by the way, were very, like, you know, highfalutin kind of stuff about.
You've got to wait for a tabloid to ask.
You didn't want to chime in with. Why did you decide to have someone wank off a horse?
I just thought if I go, boy, don't eat. Horse wanking scene. Fill me in on the details. But it is a moment.
Fill me in on the details.
Yeah, that is good. And so am I, ironically, because you won't let me open my windows. But
Dyer's on Fire. That could be the name of the
Dyer's
on Fire.
There we go. Yeah. We've got a name for the series.
Yeah, if you need me. But it is a moment, the horse wanking scene that Kay didn't notice. And because I think it underlines how weird the show ends up being. Because to start off, you think, oh, this is a fairly standard police procedural. Jenna Coleman's playing a cop in a small town in the north, and it starts with a crime. There's like an obvious, there's a fire. This boathouse thing gets burnt down. It's obviously arson, even though the whole rest of the town refuses to deal with it, except that it's arson, even though obviously it's arson. And she's the one who's going to investigate, and her boss doesn't think she should investigate for reasons. And she's got a sidekick played by Archie Renault Hitch, who's like a very old school, like macho dude who, you know, sexist basically. And she gets treated in the kind of classic prime suspect way that a lady detective gets treated, with lots of people judging her for everything she does and says, mostly because she's a woman. And she's really good. Jenna Coleman's absolutely, absolutely fantastic in this role. But you feel like, oh, Jenna Coleman as a detective. Yeah, brilliant. But interestingly, at this Q&A, she talked about how she'd resisted offers to do pick up detective things at the budget because she thought it was a bit kind of obvious. You know, she's done a lot of crime thrillers. She did The Serpent, she did The Cry, which was brilliant. Yeah. Wilderness, which was demented.
Oh, Sandman, yeah, Boydie. Sandman.
Right.
Boyd, yes. Victoria.
No, I'm talking about crime.
No, I'm joking. Sorry.
What crimes did Queen Victoria?
She's a paranormal investigator in Sandman. That's why it worked.
There you go. But then you get into the nitty-gritty of this show, and it's kind of all kinds of kind of weird things going on. It ends up being about, as well as the mystery, the central mystery, it touches upon abuse, exploitation, inappropriate age gaps, relationships. And it turns out that she herself, her late late husband was much older than her when they got married. And that becomes an interesting thing, reflecting upon what she's investigating. I think it was genuinely surprising to me, the show. I was really impressed. And it takes a turn,
doesn't it,
towards the end of the first episode, which I thought was absolutely brilliantly handled and brilliantly clever.
That was a proper, I had to stop and then rewatch half of that episode again.
And in the room, they were talking about, again, going back to this launch, sorry, but they were talking about, you know, how daring it is and how, and the writer was really impressive. Of course, I've forgotten her name. Kat Jones, you mentioned her in your intro, thankfully. Kat Jones, she was really impressive and interesting about the kind of thing, what she wanted to say and what she wanted. And she basically said, you know, she admitted that she's using this crime, traditional police procedural, seemingly, to smuggle in the Trojan horse, addressing all of these ideas and topics and issues, which are really important, that they're going to be dealt with in the story. So I think it's really good. Excellent.
There are some very pointed lines in this when it's talking about essentially predatory male behaviour, specifically with regards to teenage girls. And it was just, and again, it doesn't fuck about. Like, there's a very, it's like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like he's attracted to her because of her youth.
He wasn't
attracted to her and she's young. It's like, and again, it does feel like there's a very clear point being made about this kind of behaviour. And it does give you the proper ick as well.
Yes. I just want to say as well that where Richo appears in it as Riz, who's a crime podcast, it's got that crime podcast element. So it's got another element thrown in. Amelia Bulmore plays her mum, and Amelia Bulmore's always brilliant.
Her psychic mum.
Her psychic mum. Yeah, she's a psychic. she can, in theory, commune with the dead. And Ruby Stokes is excellent as her daughter as well. I thought she was really good. So it's got the rest of the cast are excellent. Sorry, Kay, I interrupted you. You were about to say something.
No, sorry. It's just me making random noises in the background while you're talking. So sorry for interrupting. My bad. Yeah, do you know what? It's a really funny one. Like, so when it starts off, you think it's just going to be not a pedestrian, but like just a regular detective drama about this arson that, you know, happens at the beginning. And it very quickly shifts focus to be about something else. And it's something quite dark. And some people might find it difficult as well, because it's, you know, about children and, you know, sexual abuse and manipulation, this, that and the other. But it was fascinating. And I really liked particularly the dynamic between these two young girls. I can't remember. One's called Caitlin, who the other girl, who's a rebel, insists on like shortening to Kitty. And that Kitty is very like, she's a bit of a loner and she's easily influenced. And like, you're just watching it unfold and you can see how easily this would happen. The friend has like an older boyfriend, and like it's just fascinating to see like these different types of manipulation that can occur. I really liked it. And the thing that we're referring to, which people probably will get cross that we're saying when it happens, but there's this thing that happens, and it was at that point, because I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, but I don't know if I was necessarily right. I'm desperate to watch the next episode.
That's because you missed the horse scene.
Mm.
Yeah, it's because I didn't see the horse wank. But
I don't know what you would... Maybe you went to get a cup of tea. It's hard to say. Or maybe your brain just refused to compute.
I was having a mare. What can I say?
Hey!
Thank you.
there's a moment just to explain for Kay, to allow for it. It was like, when we were watching it at this screen, I was thinking, is that what's happening here?
I had that as well. You're not entirely sure. It is what's happening, but it's not explicit.
So to be fair to you, I think there are other people who didn't quite realise what was going on.
Yeah.
It's not signposted.
The way it's shot, I have to shoot it in a certain way. So get into the nitty gritty of it anyway.
Compared to Mr. Big Stuff, this is a very different type of horseplay.
Yes, exactly.
Wait, do you know what? I really hope at the end, I didn't look to the credit, if they said something like no animals were hurt or pleasured during these scenes.
I can absolutely assure you they did. There is a note about that. Yes.
Oh really?
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Brackets, the horse enjoyed it, we had concern.
Oh my god.
Oh, steady. And you're taking it further than us and you didn't even notice it.
Anyway, but the thing that happened, that's the thing that really for me just took it up a notch and like was so intriguing, because I was like, oh, okay, there's a depth to this, even more so than before I thought before. What I would say is about the character of Riz, not the actress. The actress is great. The character of Riz, who is this podcaster investigating the death of a young teen 17 years previously, which is what draws Ember's, aka, you know, Jenna Coleman's attention to it, to this case. This character is just so annoying. Like, podcasts have a really bad rap on TV so far, like, except for Only Murders in the Building, because they're not all annoying, are they? Are they?
Well, what was that one? Podcasters? There was the one recently on that Apple, on that Netflix show that, you know, the ridiculous Irish
I didn't like that.
Oh, yes, the one the name of which I've forgotten.
Yeah, I forgot
yes.
as well, yeah.
And then that was... Yes, that was... That the was, podcast aspect of that was the least interesting part,
Yeah.
I don't think she's as annoying as they were, but anyway.
I disagree. Okay. I think that on a similar level, is that, you know, and I get it, it's like a kind of a, you know, commentary on podcasters, especially ones investigating true crime, plus, you know, just the machinations of it. So the sing-songy cadence and also the phrasing. Like, I actually wrote some, I chase the darkness for a living. This place is the A to Z of misogyny and V is for victim blaming. I was like, oh my God, I want to peel my skin off. But probably an accurate representation in that regard. She reminded me, to be honest, of the daughter from Douglas Is Cancelled.
Oh yeah, God,
remember her?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So yeah, but overall, I did enjoy it. And the thing that piqued my interest most is not what I originally thought it'd be. So yeah, I will be watching more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was The Jetty, which comes to BBC One. On which day, Boydie?
Today, Monday, the 15th, and it continues tomorrow, the 16th, and the next two episodes, this four-parter, will be the following Monday and Tuesday, but it'll be on the BBC iPlayer at the same time with 2024.
Okay.
Yes,
I really have to shoehorn the 2024 into that one,
yes.
Sorry. Yeah.
Right. Well, finally this week we have...
He's not amused.
No.
Sorry.
Well, finally this week, we have Those About to Die on Prime Video, which attempts to take us back to gladiatorial Rome in the same week as Ridley Scott's Gladiator 2 trailer dropped, which is a bold move, to put it mildly. This is directed by Roland Emmerich, but it may not have gladiators fighting sharks, but as befits a Rome-set series, it does have a surplus of swords, laurels, togas, though Boydie is not wearing one, and rampant nudity, as well as Ewan Rian running what can only be assumed to be the Roman branch of William Hill. It does not, unfortunately, feature a gladiator wanking off a lion, though. So, sorry, that particular trend this week ends here. But yeah, it could be coming
up. Have you watched all the episodes?
I haven't seen them all. Exactly. It could happen. Exactly. It could be coming. Yeah. No pun intended. Yeah. However, this first
He's
episode
on a roll.
Does have a lion fucking up a number of humans. So I guess that's something. But enough of this. Boydie, were you not entertained?
I was entertained. I was mightily entertained, in fact. And this is, I thought it was really, this is a romp, basically. It's an unashamed kind of Roman era period romp that doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's got that kind of Roland Emmerich kind of over-the-topness that he brought to us in such fantastic films as Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow in 2012.
Yeah.
All the films of which I absolutely love. And he's obviously very good at spectacle. This is based on a non-fiction book, by the way, about how the kind of gladiatorial games worked and how the Colosseum was built in Rome and how Roman society was like stratified into these different kind of groupings, which they kind of deal with in the show. And how basically, as you say, they put bets on these events like we do now. I think it's really interesting. And as you say, Ewan Rion's character, is that how you pronounce it?
Ewan Rion.
Ewan Rion.
Yeah.
His character is basically, like, as you say, this kind of trumped up organizer of betting. That's kind of what he does.
Bet Fredicus.
Yeah, exactly. but then you see the... Sir Anthony Hopkins is in it as the existing ruler, Emperor Vespasian, and he's been in power for a decade and he's losing his popularity because there's like people are hungry and there's not enough food. And he's got these two sons. One of them is a kind of military figure called Titus, played by Tom Hughes, and the other is kind of like a more manipulative guy played by Jojo Macari, who's got, by the way, he's got a young boyfriend who he kind of brings along with him wherever he goes, who just like at his service, or he dismisses him if he doesn't want to be bothered by him at any given moment.
As
it should be, yeah. So it's and you've got Anthony Hopkins in a role where it's quite a substantial role. You know, I think you remember him, I guess the other big TV show he did was Westworld. And I remember kind of being slightly underwhelmed by him in Westworld because he was just being Anthony Hopkins and, you know, he'd kind of pop up every now and then, wouldn't he? Kind of saying
something.
And be cryptic. Whereas in this is a proper character, and it's a proper kind of quite juicy character with his two sons that got to decide between. And I think he was having a good time making it, having a good time with this whole idea. So I think it is entertaining. I like the tone of it, as I say, which doesn't take itself too seriously. But and yet at the same time, you are learning quite a lot in a fun way about what went on during Roman times. And as you said, the gratuitous nudity is quite extraordinary.
There's an orgy scene, because of course there is.
Of Yeah. I mean, there's an orgy scene. There's a scene where one of the gladiators is just like strolling through the post-match kind of like backstage, and there's just like dozens of men, naked men, oiling themselves
it's
up.
It's like the Heat Office, isn't
yeah,
it, Boydie?
It's exactly like the Heat Office, yeah. So it's fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I love a Rome show. I love a Rome show. I love Spartacus, Blood and Sand. I love, well, Rome, obviously. Yeah. I've just Same. There's just something
Roman
about
holiday.
Roman holiday. Yes, yeah. There's something about Rome and that era and all the togas. Boydie, of course, being the toga expert.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very compelling. So I do like it, and I was very much here for it. And this was not quite what I expected, actually, because it has a slightly different tone to the other Rome shows I've seen. The only thing that I enjoyed getting into, you know, the whole games aspect of it. I love all the gladiator stuff, and I think we obviously were going down that route. It's mainly racing in this first episode. I'm sure there'll be more of the gladiatorial combat at some point later on, because those about to race is probably a slightly different show. The only thing I slightly struggle with a little bit on this, and this is, I think, a very personal bugbear. I don't know that anyone else notices it. I get the impression, Boydie, that you didn't notice it at all. But it's our old friend, the LED volume.
Oh, God.
I think I developed like this.
You need to just let it go.
I know, but I think I've developed like this keen sense that whenever I sort of smell the whiff of the LED volume, it just starts to bug me because I can't not see it. So when there's a Star Wars show that uses it, I just can't not see the screen behind them. And I really struggle with that because it feels like it has a different texture to the foreground stuff and it takes me out of things. But it is possible that that is a very James thing and not a normal human thing.
Possibly. Oh, 100%. It's entirely probable,
yeah,
and completely obvious that it is you. It's your issue, yeah.
I have a bit of a volume aversion. But I do like Rome, so, you know, there's that.
Rome, volume,
yay, volume not so.
Who's going to win out?
Indeed.
Who can say?
Indeed.
I'm just checking, actually, where it was actually shot.
Are you going to try and find out? And they're going to say, no LED volume was used in the production of this show.
No, what does it say?
It said this was shot entirely on the LED volume.
Elstree.
New technology to recreate the ancient
city. There we
go. It says, yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, look at him bathing in his smugness.
Yeah, it's appalling.
You poo-pooed my volume sixth sense. You sniffed and turned your nose about it, but, you know, I've got a nose for these things.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Those About to Volume is on Prime Video.
Shut up.
When does it land, Boydie?
Those About to Die is on Prime Video in full. The whole series.
Oh, it all
arrives.
Drops at once?
Yeah, because I think
they don't do that often.
No, but I think it's a Peacock show in the States.
Yes, of course.
I think it's effectively they've acquired it, I think. I don't know whether they co-financed it, but it's all drops, I think, 10 episodes. You can enjoy on Friday, the 19th of July, 2024.
10 episodes of Roman action. Okay, what else is out this week that we have not covered? Obviously, Lady in the Lake, which you've mentioned, which we'll be doing on Pilot Plus.
Absolutely, which is quite bonkers as well. I didn't mention how bonkers it is in my shock description of what it was in the build-up to Beth's interview. There's a show on Saturday coming up, Saturday the 20th of July, on ITV1 at 9:30 p.m. after the latest episode of Changing Ends, the Alan Carr comedy, called Piglets, which is from the team that did Green Wing. Do you remember Green Wing?
Yes.
Yeah.
A classic hospital set comedy. This is Victoria Pyle, kind of it's her thing that she creates, and she always has a team of writers with her. And she also did a university set drama as well, which was really funny, on Channel 4, and called Campus. And this is her latest one. It's another workplace drama, and the workplace this time is a police training college. And Mark Heap's in it, and I think it's hilariously funny. I always like Victoria Pyle stuff. I think Grand Batch Green Wing was brilliant. It's got that very loose kind of anything could happen vibe to it, where it's got this setting and you meet these characters, but all equally genuinely silly, deliberately silly, airplane style stuff happens. But you don't even like airplane. Have you been through this before?
Yeah.
Oh, you idiot. One of the greatest.
Who doesn't like humour or comedy or laughing or joy?
All of these things are true.
Oh, yeah. So if you do like that kind of humour, which is especially when Victoria Park,
which is most people,
which is most normal people, you will very much enjoy Piglets. But I also want to say, I think it's really refreshing. ITV1 is now showing comedy, these half-hour comedies, on Saturday night at 9 o'clock, which is a very whole new thing for them. And good on it, because, you know, I think for years and years, ITV hardly did any comedy of any sort. And I think, helped by ITVX, I think, they're doing more of this stuff. So all of the series are available as in one go on ITVX, but they're actually going out week by week on ITV1 Saturday night. So I think that's really good.
I hope the ratings support that boldness.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope that. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Alan Carr series has come back for a second series, so that must have done pretty well. Cobra Kai is back.
Cobra Kai
fans like me and James on Thursday, the 18th of July. And you know, there's three chunks.
I know.
It's insane.
Yeah, they
split
it into three. Because they started splitting these, you know, Netflix, home of the drop the whole series at once, started splitting up their big shows. And now they're splitting them into thirds.
Yeah. There's 15 episodes to go. So we get the first chunk of those 15 episodes starting on Thursday. Not starting, but on Thursday. Then there's another bunch coming up towards the end of the year. And then there's a finale event in 2025.
Okay, that's mad.
Can I just tell you why I'm laughing?
Yeah.
Because Boyd was holding up the magazine to read out the listings, and he basically held it so close to the Zoom that all I could see was the cover, but the section of Vicky Patterson's boobs.
Okay.
Yeah. Going behind the, drawing the veil there. Okay. I'm not sure we want to go into that. There's Quantum Leap Series 2, yes.
Oh my God, that is
back. The remake.
Who knew?
I know. Paramount Plus Thursday. Code Black, also Paramount Plus Monday. That's a kind of old medical drama set in LA's Angels Memorial Hospital. There's an Orlando Bloom like reality show on you know, which is the new UK TV plays streaming thing.
Paddleboarding with Orlando, is it?
Apparently paddleboarding with Orlando. Anything else? No, I think that's it, pretty much.
Okie dokie.
Oh, McDonald and Dodds, which Kay mentioned earlier.
Oh.
That is on the Sunday. Yes. That's
oh, Boyd. Oh, Boyd, if you will repeat what I've just said.
ITV1, but that is absolutely part of the what else is on section. Just to say, just to underline.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right, well, that is it for this week's podcast. But before we do that, we need to know what our pick of the week is.
The jetty.
It's the jetty.
It's the jetty.
Horse notwithstanding, it is the jetty.
Yeah.
It is the jetty, but I am going to make a mention of Mr. Big Stuff.
Absolutely not. Right.
And I really liked Those About to Die as well.
That was the podcast. If you enjoyed it and, like Marie Antoinette, you want to let us eat cake, then please do send in a review. Do head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-horse racing. And also, you know, follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, at James C. Dyer. And if you are a commissioner at any of the big streaming networks or indeed broadcasters, please do come to me for Dyer's on Fire. Let's make it happen. That's it. I think we're done. What are we going to do next week? Time Bandits, as we mentioned, is out next week. We might end up reviewing that.
Yes.
The Decameron comes to Netflix.
Yes.
Is there anything else? There's nothing else on the camera, Boydie, so I'm assuming not.
I genuinely have forgotten about the calendar, and there's so many things that I've got to worry about these days.
I'm forgetful.
Fitting the calendar in is the least of our worries. What else is on? I'll tell you quickly now. I'll have a quick perusal. Elite is back. My favourite. I love Elite. It's so demented, but they never send screeners for that. The thing called Tokyo Swindlers on Netflix. Have you heard of that?
No,
that's interesting. Love and Death. We might have reviewed that anyway. That's coming to ITV. I think we reviewed that when it was on like ITVX or whatever. So, so it's basically Time Bandits. Please God, let's hope that fits in with the global embargo.
Or it could be a very short podcast. Yeah, indeed.
And same for the Decameron, actually. Oh my God.
Fantastic. Yeah. That sounds great. Yeah. Well, do tune into Pilot Plus and listen to our review of Lady in the Lake. And I should point out, listen to our House of the Dragon spoiler discussion, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And of course, listening to the postbag.
And of course,
listen
to Kay's
postbag.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
I was just about to shut my as I always end this podcast every week by satisfyingly shut my laptop. Of course, Kay's on it. We need to say goodbye to Kay.
I thought it'd make it even more satisfying for you that just slamming it shut me.
Amazing.
It's what he's wanted to do all those years.
Right, that's it. We're done. Kay, you're remote, but you can leave now.
More importantly, James, do I have your permission to open my window?
Yes. Kay, can reopen your window.
No, keep it closed.
Seconds
all night.
Away from expiring from the extreme heat in this office room.
You can breathe once more.
Thank you.
Oh, pilot out.